Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
James Johnson, the pull-up jumper. Whiteside misses the tip. 3 seconds left. Dragic puts it up. Whiteside tips it in, and the Heat win the game.
With one hand, the left hand, Hassan Whiteside gets the game-winning tip in with what was essentially a playoff game. The Heat beat the Pistons 97-96. That's an exciting way to win a game, David.
That's right. Miami's only one-game win of the season, and it comes in absolutely dramatic fashion. After going back and forth for most of the game, Detroit hot on the heels, trying to climb their way back into Eastern Conference standings. Fall 96-97 to Miami. Good game from Whiteside, and obviously an absolutely great finish in really dramatic fashion. Carried off the court by James Johnson, no less, who started off the play. That was as exciting as you can possibly get for a regular season game.
So let's take it back to that final play, and then we'll recap the rest of the game. But that final play was something else, because Rodney Magruder, who really struggled towards the end of that game, he has an offensive rebound with a minute and 14 left that off of a Tyler Johnson miss. The Heat are up just 1 point. Tyler Johnson misses. It's 92-91. Tyler Johnson misses. Magruder gets an offensive rebound. He puts up a shot, and he misses. That could have been a moment where he puts up a shot and makes it, and all of a sudden Magruder is the hero of the game, but he misses it. It happens, right? It was a tough shot.
Sure.
He gets a turnover. There's another, on I think the next possession, and then a few possessions later, he's able to the Heat are down after a Contavious Caldwell-Pope three and an Ish Smith two-pointer that puts the Pistons up, and the Heat are pressing on the inbounds play. They're able to create a loose ball situation, and rather than being able to harness the ball, Magruder actually kicks the ball. It's a kickball foul. The Pistons get the ball, and he's all torn up about it. I mean, he had a rough couple last minute there, and then he's the one inbounding the ball with, 9 seconds left or something like that. You could tell he's playing it safe because he throws the ball way into the... He's motioning at James Johnson before he's even starting the inbound process, and he basically says, go into the backcourt. Because James Johnson runs right into the backcourt. Magruder throws it way into the backcourt. James Johnson has to run in to go get it. He's got the ball at like three-quarters court. He streaks up the court with the ball to about the right elbow, puts up a shot, and it wasn't a bad shot. He had the matchup. Gets the shot, rattles out. Whiteside is able to kind of bang it off the glass. And Goran Dragic, of all people, is able to take the ball away from Tobias Harris and is then able to somehow manage to put a shot up himself within traffic. Puts up that shot. That one rattles off the front of the rim. And Whiteside, with one hand, his one good hand, right? Because the right hand has got 13 stitches and bandages on it. With that left hand, is able to tip the ball in with no time left, is able to just get it in, then the Heat win the game. This is a game where Miami led by as much as 12, I think, and the Pistons rallied back, took the lead, and Miami was able to, in the last minute, manage the win there. That was a gutsy, gutsy win by Miami.
Yeah, a historically important one, too. Miami's the last game in the Palace at Auburn Hills before the Pistons move on to their new arena. And they close out their time there. And again, very, very dramatic fashion. I mean, a game-winning shot at the buzzer. Really exciting stuff. One that, helps Miami hang on to their current eighth seed in the Eastern Conference standings. And Detroit is a team who has been struggling greatly of late. And we should point that out. On a second night of a back-to-back, yet strangely emotionally invested in tonight's game. Unlike how they performed against the Knicks the night before, they seem to be much more interested in trying to pull out a win here, as if they felt that this was their last chance, perhaps, of trying to secure a playoff seat.
Yeah,
and, I mean, they played Miami tight.
It had a playoff atmosphere, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. There was some intensity on their part. Look, I saw them up close a couple days ago when they were in Orlando. That was a broken team. They lost by 30. They've lost a couple games since then. They just haven't found a way to be able to tie it all together. There's issues there with Reggie Jackson, who sat out tonight's game. Andre Drummond really isn't effective in any other capacity other than as a rebounder and big body. But this is a team that's, you know, not playing at their best for Stan Van Gundy. And tonight, however, they really were emotionally invested, like I said, and played Miami very tight. So it was still very impressive for Miami to be able to hang tight there, still without Deion Waiters, with Goran Dragic nursing a slight injury. Not that it really was apparent tonight, but overall, Miami just played a really, really good game.
You know, I think a lot of Heat fans might, after this excitement wears down, there might be some worry that, look, the Detroit was able to do this on the second night of a back-to-back. Can Miami hang on? But this was a playoff game, essentially, for both teams, because Detroit enters this game with a 2-1 season series lead over Miami. If they win this game, right, they own the tiebreaker outright, and they have a really good chance at getting the eighth seed if they're able to win this game. So it's no wonder they were able to get up and go for this one. But Miami, by winning it, they tie the season series 2-2, and now the best and now that tiebreaker goes to conference record. And I'm not sure if you have the standings in front of you right now, what the Pistons and the Heat are as far as their Eastern Conference records. We can look it up.
Pistons are 7 games under 500, whereas the Heat are just 1 game under 500 as far as their conference records are concerned.
So right now Miami would, I guess, have the edge for that conference, for that tiebreaker.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely huge. And they might not even need it, because now they're a game up for the eighth spot. I'm not sure Detroit's even in the mix anymore with this loss. And they're a game away now from a 7th spot, a game behind Indiana. Atlanta, before tonight, had lost 7 straight, so that even the gap to the 5th seed is much tighter than it was before. So this was a really big game for Miami. They talked about it after, like, this was essentially a playoff game, and they were able to come out and win it in you know, the third quarter. They got out to a 14-2 run. Mm-hmm. That gave them a 12-point lead, 72-60. And at that point, it looked like maybe they were able to put that game away. Detroit just didn't
have
the
gas.
Right. Like, okay, right. Detroit doesn't have the gas. Second night of back-to-back. Tough schedule loss for the Pistons. Heat getting a good one. But, you know, with everything at stake, they were able to get back in it. And Miami being able to pull it out without Deion Waiters, like you mentioned, I thought they really struggled to score the ball down the stretch, and they were losing the rebounding battle. I mean, this was just something where the Pistons just found some sort of energy. But, you know, in that last second, they were able to grab 2 really important rebounds, offensive rebounds, and able to win the game there. They were just able to come up strong without Deion Waiters, who was kind of the guy who was coming up big with them, for them with shots. They were able to find a way to win, you know?
Yeah. Let's focus on the positive for a bit here. Obviously, yeah. I guess Goran Dragic had a huge night. He's been struggling as late. A lot of his struggles have been broken down at length over the last few days. He's struggling from three-point range. He hasn't gotten the same kind of push on his drives to the basket. He hasn't gotten the same kind of spacing on his three-point shot without Deion Waiters there to help create. But tonight he had a really big game, bouncing back 28 points overall, 9 of 16 from the field, 9 of 13 from the free throw line, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and a block. So impressive night overall. Did struggle from the perimeter, still just 1 of 4, right, but that was Miami's issue all night, really. They were struggling from the three-point line for, as a team in general, just scoring 23.8% of all their shots from behind the arc. But still, Goran looked really, really good. Now, Ish Smith is a little undersized. He's starting for the Pistons with Reggie Jackson out, who had been moved to the bench of late anyway. So Ish Smith would have gone the starting nod regardless. They're a little shorthanded at the point guard position. He's not known as a defender. They have longtime Heat point guard Beno Udrih coming off the bench. He is actually surprisingly solid. He just does what he does anywhere. He actually played 17 minutes, 2 of 6 from the field, and 6 points overall. But anyway, Ish Smith, not a great defender, but Goran really just had his number. He was able to use the iron shoulder, create space there against Drummond, Aaron Baines, whoever was quote-unquote protecting their rim. And again, 28 points on the night when Miami needed every one of those.
I thought that Dragic was really considerate at getting to the rim tonight, where that wasn't the case
you mean
as
deliberate?
Much. Deliberate, yeah. Where it wasn't the case as much in those last few games, especially without Waiters, because we know that he's dealing with a bursitis, whatever that is, on his foot. And it's creating, like, Jay Sable to have to, the Heat's trainer to have to, like, cut shoes or holes in his shoes and stuff like that to relieve some pressure. Just a nasty injury that you could tell is, you know, making him maybe settle for shots in the last few games, not get to the rim as much. It's affecting his first step. And I don't know if he feels better or if he's just tough through it more so tonight, but he got to the rim a lot more, and he only took 4 3-pointers. And most of his shots came near the rim. I thought he had a really nice first step. When you talk about Ish Smith and maybe Dragic taking advantage of him, what Detroit was doing the whole game was trapping Dragic in that pick and roll situation, much like we saw the Heat do in the Big Three era, where they would let Chris Bosh trap the ball handler in pick and rolls. That's exactly what Detroit was doing. So they've got two guys around Dragic. That's hard to get around for a point guard, much less a point guard who's clearly hurt, but he was able to do it for a lot of the game. I mean, he had 16 points in the first half. I think Detroit played that trap a little bit harder in the second half, but he was still able to score 12 points in the second half, so it's not like it slowed him down a whole lot. That was a huge, huge game from Dragic, and if he's still as injured as he was, that was borderline heroic, you know, sports heroic.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't look it. I mean, he had mentioned before the game, I think, that he was just going to try to find a way, as you pointed out, to fight through it. And I think those were his exact words. He was dealing with the pain, the discomfort, the holes in the shoes for whatever reason, alleviate some of that pressure. The training staff was in charge of that, so it's not like it was just a homemade remedy where he's just punching holes and things arbitrarily. Yeah. But still, yeah, a really big game for him, and you know, a necessary one, because again, they needed all of his scoring. But it's been interesting to see him kind of struggle without Waiters there to help alleviate some of the pressure. So for him to bounce back and have this kind of game was a great sign for Heat fans, I think. But you know what? Also, a big game for Hassan Whiteside. I think there was probably some overstating the battle between him and Andre Drummond.
Wait. I want to stop you there because I want to talk about Whiteside. I do.
All right, let's do it.
But first, we got a shout out to our listeners. Listen. If you're a listener and you own a company and your company is looking to reach a male audience between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast right here in this spot. You want Heat fans to hear your advertisement after these big Heat wins. Locked On Heat is listened to by 95% men, 74% between the ages of 18 and 44. According to a recent study, podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with a sponsor than from traditional media. Plus, our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listeners, so you get your value. Email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com to find out more about sponsoring Locked On Heat and engaging the audience you want to reach.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Okay, so you were saying about Hassan Whiteside. He had a huge game.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. The matchup between Andre Drummond, like I said, was probably a little overstated. Drummond's a big name, a big body. But Whiteside really seemed to have the edge over him all night. Finished with 17 points overall, 7 of 13 from the field, 3 of 4 for the free throw line, so a big night for him. Just 9 rebounds, and I say just in quote marks if you can see them, because his double-digit streak ended at 15 games. His double-double streak ended at 15 games tonight. He wasn't able to keep that going through the end of the season, but that's okay. It's still a big game, and I think he would be happy to give up that one extra rebound just so that he could have the game-winning shot that he did. Drummond is an interesting case there because, again, as big a body as he is, as young as he is, he just doesn't always seem to be fully engaged defensively. And Whiteside, for what all the struggles that we've talked about all season and, you know, sometimes his lack of good positioning defensively or offensively, he seemed to be able to capitalize on Drummond's defensive tendencies. He was seemed like he was always in the right place. He was, I think he was hedging a little bit more on pick and roll situations. He seemed to be, I think, a little bit more effective overall. And again, you know, even though Drummond led the rebounding battle 13-9, it didn't seem like it was an overwhelming one. I think that's just Detroit's scheme by design so that Drummond can continue to get those rebounds. He does have some nice ups. You know, he's very agile, et cetera. But that's all he really does. I mean, he's just finished with 9 points, 4 of 7 from the field. You know, 2 blocks, 2 assists, 2 steals. So a good stat line, but not a great one. You expect more out of a guy that's, you know, supposedly as highly touted as Drummond is and is capable of doing as much as he can. He just didn't show it tonight. And Whiteside, I think, definitely had the edge over him.
In the last 3 games that Miami and Detroit played before this game, January 28th, Whiteside has 9 points on 4 of 9 shooting, 12 rebounds. Mm. On January 1st, Whiteside was out with an injury. Mm. Doesn't count. November 23rd, 6 points on 3 of 8 shooting and 8 rebounds. So he was a non-factor in all of the Pistons games prior to tonight. With Deion Waiters out, I think Miami obviously went... They have been, even before tonight, and while Waiters has been out. They've been going to Whiteside a little bit more. We talked a lot about during this recent win streak, or stretch of wins, I should say. Mm. In the beginning of the year, the Heat were just going to Whiteside and posting him up a lot because they had no other forms of offense. They didn't know what else to do. Spoelstra, you know, through a process, figured out what the offense was going to be. Waiters gets back healthy. Dragic gets healthy. Everybody, you know, James Johnson is losing weight. And all of a sudden they have a offensive formula that works. And Whiteside's getting the ball a lot less. And there's a lot less post-ups, which is a much more efficient offense. But with Waiters out, the Heat have been going to Whiteside more. But the good news is that Whiteside isn't posting up a whole lot anymore. The Heat have he's setting better screens, number one, which is freeing them up for rolls to the rim in pick-and-roll situations. I think Dragic, James Johnson, Tyler Johnson are finding a really nice job of finding him in those pick-and-roll situations. Mm-hmm. He's scoring a lot more efficiently. I think it was either Eric Reed or Tony Florentino tonight mentioned that he's been a lot more patient when the ball's in his hands. We've talked a lot about when he'll get the ball at the free-throw line and just push-shot it immediately at the rim. Right, it's like not even a shot. I haven't noticed that as much. It seems like he's a little bit more patient. He's realizing, like, I've got the ball in my hands. There's no rush right now. I could do a post move. I could fake one way or the other. I could do something with this. And he is. And that allows him to really get his touch under control because he's got nice touch when he shoots, when he wants to. So he's been really effective lately. And I thought with the Heat really going after him because outside Dragic led the team with 28 points. He also led the team with 16 field goal attempts. Behind Dragic was Whiteside with 13 field goal attempts and 17 points. He was the second leading scorer. They were running the offense through him as much almost as much as they were running the offense through Dragic. That was a huge game for Whiteside.
Yeah. I did notice that he was catching the ball a little higher away from the basket, and I think he was able to use his speed, which is I was surprised. I didn't realize that he was quicker than Drummond, to be honest with you. But it looked, you know, like he was much sharper offensively and was able to just use his speed to get past. He had a quick first step. He was able to get past Drummond. And then they were sliding over, I think on a couple occasions, it was Ben Udre and then Ish Smith as well, and were meeting him as he was going on his way to the rim. So he was able to stop himself short of committing the offensive foul. I don't know if you noticed these plays I'm talking about.
I did.
And then he hoisted a shot. Unfortunately, a couple of those, I think, rattled out. But again, it does show some evolution. I think past Whiteside would probably have just barreled through them and committed the offensive foul. And, you know, we saw that in a game that comes down to the wire like tonight's did, those kinds of crucial possessions would have swayed in Detroit's favor. So I think it does show some patience on his end and an evolution of sorts. So, I mean, maybe not a huge difference maker, but something that's a pretty significant amount of growth, I think, for a guy who we've criticized in the past.
Eric Spoelstra, in one of the local papers I was reading, that Eric Spoelstra mentioned that Hassan Whiteside in these last few weeks is a completely different player than he's been in his whole career. And he said completely different. And it's really made me start watching him a little bit more. We've talked about a lot how he's setting better screens lately. I think that's nothing new here. But, I mean, maybe his patience with the ball in his hands, you know, he's getting more offensive rebounds lately. So yeah. More of a focus on affecting the offense that way, as opposed to trying to affect the offense with hook shots. Yeah. Not as many hook shots. I mean, yeah. He's been, for all of the things that we criticize Whiteside of being, of not doing the little things, of being a little, of playing maybe outside of his range of capabilities, he's really, you know, brought it, you know, wrangled it in, so to speak, and he's playing way better than he has at any point in his career right now.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you point out that he's not shooting that hook shot as much. And look, I've noticed it a little bit more tonight in contrast of Andre Drummond. You know, friend of the program, Ian Levy, wrote a great piece last week about Drummond's ineffective offense. I'm not sure if you got a chance to catch that or not, but it did point out, it pointed out a lot of the ways that Drummond struggles, particularly in the hook shot. Yeah. He's taken more than any other player in the league. I think Whiteside comes in second most, and that's by a pretty wide margin. But he's missed more. Okay, that was the exact statistic. Drummond has missed more shots than anybody else in the league has taken, other than Hassan Whiteside.
More hook shots. And so, right?
Yeah, more hook shots. Yeah.
I remember this now.
So that's how bad Drummond has been. Yeah, absolutely. You know, despite the fact that he has the agility, the size, everything else, he doesn't have that kind of touch around the basket. But he keeps going to that shot. Detroit keeps going to him to make that shot. It's confounding. But either way, in contrast to the way Whiteside's playing, it's obviously a major step up. So I did notice that, and I'm glad that you pointed it out for our listener.
So is there any doubt at this point? Well, Drummond was picked he was definitely picked in the lottery. He was like a top six pick or something like that out of UConn.
I think it was fifth overall, maybe?
Something like that. Yeah, really high up. Whiteside obviously undrafted. We know his story. Is there any doubt that Whiteside's a better player than Drummond? Whiteside's a better player than Drummond? He can dominate. He's got that capability to just dominate a game. I've not seen Drummond just being able to dominate a game.
He was drafted ninth overall, just check. But you know, it's an interesting question. I think there tends to be a bias there, because I think Detroit was one of those teams at the start of the season that a lot of people expected them to make some noise. They had, you know, Stanley Johnson, they had Tobias Harris, they had Reggie Jackson, who was supposed to take a leap of there in his third year with Detroit. I think they have the pieces in place there. They just haven't been able to tie together, and I think Drummond's a big part of that. I mean, there's clearly a comfort level when he plays alongside Jackson. They go to each other pretty frequently. There's a nice chemistry there. But at the same time, Jackson has tried to do a lot more than he's capable of at times. He hasn't shot the ball particularly well, and that hurts the team overall. As far as Drummond versus Whiteside is concerned, I think you could definitely make the case for Whiteside, because he's a more balanced player, particularly defensively, where Drummond is a sieve. He does not do anything other than rebound well.
I'm looking at their game logs right now. Whiteside or Drummond has a really quick count, 14 20-point games.
That's more than I would have expected, to be honest with you.
Same. But I'm going to count Whiteside right now, live on air. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's a 30-point game.
This is riveting for our listeners.
I know. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. So 10 more 20-point games. And he's got 3 30-point games. Drummond didn't have any of those this season. So offensively, Whiteside, I mean, we've talked about Whiteside's, the ceiling for Whiteside gives the Heat a higher ceiling than maybe, you know, a lot of people expect. Even in a playoff game, I think, just having Whiteside, what he can do on a night where he just dominates, where he gives you 32 points and like 15 rebounds or something like that, is just something that a lot of players in the NBA right now simply cannot do, including Andre Drummond. So, yeah, I think the obvious edge goes there to Whiteside, who also might lead the league in rebounding this year. Yeah. Which would be the first time a Heat player's ever led the league in rebounding, which is surprising.
I think it's a different era. Maybe Ronnie Cicely had the best chance there, but that was definitely an era of basketball where the rebound was emphasized much more than it is today.
So let's look ahead. So now the Heat are a game up over Chicago for the eighth seed. They play New York tomorrow, second game of a back-to-back.
Tonight, if you're listening to it on Wednesday.
Right. So they're playing Wednesday. I would usually pencil that in as a scheduled loss, but you never know with the Knicks. I mean, they're really bad. So, and then they play the Knicks again on Friday, right? They host the Knicks on Friday. So, look, this was the game of the week. If you had to pick one game for Miami to win, it was going to be this one. And they got it. Detroit now, at 34, they're two games back. They don't own the tiebreaker. I don't see how they get into it. So Miami now, they're a game behind Indiana. They're two games behind Milwaukee, as well as two games behind Atlanta for 5 and 6.
Yeah.
How are we feeling now?
Detroit's 7 games under .500. As opposed to Miami, that's just 2 games under .500. So even though there's only a 2.5-game difference in the standings, there's a pretty sizable gap there. The Bulls are 4 games under .500, so again, that's an issue as well. Indiana has really been struggling. They lost Rodney Stuckey. I don't know how much of a factor that is, but I guess they're not particularly deep, so every little bit helps. There's the chance that Miami is able to come there. I'm not sure how I feel about this Knicks game. I think you're right in that they're just too hard to figure out. It's a home-and-home series. You never know if Carmelo might feel particularly inspired to show that he still has some value to this Miami team.
Do they even want the 2 seed at this point? Boston's got a lead. They got a half-game lead on the 1 seed. That was smart by Miami to lose to Boston. That was smart. When Miami lost to Boston over the weekend,
yes,
Boston took the lead for the 1 seed. So I think what the Heat were doing is playing possum, purposely losing that game so that Boston gets the 1 seed and so that they match up with the Celtics in the first round and not the Cavaliers.
That's an interesting possibility. I'm sure there's probably some of our listeners who are watching Cleveland struggle defensively of late and are thinking that Cleveland is much more vulnerable than the Celtics are. I would dissuade that kind of line of thinking as soon as possible. I still think that Cleveland is a much tougher matchup than the Celtics are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They'll flip the switch. I don't know. It'll take – look, we saw this with LeBron on the Heat.
There are people that are doubting this. There are people doubting this. You know that, right? I mean, yes. you've seen this on Twitter. There are a lot of people going, the defensive issues of Cleveland are something they would be worried about. This is clearly a huge weakness for them. I don't know. I don't think that they give a damn.
If I'm a Cavaliers fan, which I am most certainly not, the only thing that would worry me is the whole Kardashian
Tristan Thompson thing.
Yeah, the stench of the Kardashians over Tristan Thompson, because Tristan Thompson takes it to another level in the playoffs. I don't know why that's a thing, but it is. But I don't know how Kardashian affects that, because we saw Kardashian affect James Harden last year. And as soon as Harden rids himself of the Kardashian, he has an MVP season. So,
But there was a little bit extra, I think, of the Harden Kardashian thing. I think, fabulous piece by Lee Jenkins profiling James Harden,
yep,
and how much he didn't like being on the cover. But I think he kind of sought it out a little bit too. Yes. Tristan Thompson isn't a name that anybody outside of Ohio really gives a damn about, I think.
Well, I think he's seeking the fame either way. It doesn't matter if anybody else cares. I don't know. Tristan Thompson? Yeah. Why else would you date a Kardashian? So. Why in the... For her personality?
Sure. There's got to be something there. If we're going way off topic, I mean, Lamar Odom, Chris Humphries, Tristan Thompson, James Harden, all these guys have dipped their wick in the Kardashian ink at one point or another. And there must be something there. Look, I mean, it can't just be for the chance to catch attention. It's not like Chris Humphries liked any of that attention. James Harden apparently hates it. Lamar Odom practically died as a result of that attention. So I don't think anybody goes into a relationship with a Kardashian and says, yeah, this is a good opportunity for me to cash in on that.
Well, maybe they start with that and they realize how huge of a mistake it was.
You're too late. You're in. Once you're in, you're too late. Yeah, that's possible.
All right. Well, that's all we have.
We're going to save this discussion for the offseason, I think.
I don't know what we're going to talk about in the offseason. It's going to be... This garbage. Well, we'll be back tomorrow with a recap of the next game. Until then, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us over there, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Of course, Wes.